Blog Talk yep. Radio.
You turn the game off, you said?
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is...
What?
My name is...
Dr. Dre.
Yeah.
Sir Robert Fortune.
Okay, we get it. Start the show.
Here we go, people.
Y'all ready?
Yes, sir.
Back at you for another edition, people.
Yes, sir. Talking sports with the 12th man. We are ready to roll. What's going on, fellas? America, we are officially ready to do some talking sports with the 12 men. Oh, let me grab my guys here as well as we get this party started, as we're ready for our Portland report, too, as always, or our Oregon sports report. I gotta get that right. Again, want to welcome you to talking sports with the 12th man. Checking in with my fellas, who I hope are not chilling in Miami, but they're, I don't know if they're going to report. No, they're going to report. Anyway, let's kick in with my fellas, JQ. You all right, bro?
Yeah, I don't deserve to get to talk today. I support a team that just gets destroyed on a regular basis by other good teams, so I'm gonna let Rob have all the time.
JQ, I feel your pain, bro.
How the Bengals play has nothing to do with the way you're gonna talk sports tonight.
Man, because I know. I'm not gonna be objective.
He's in his feelings. I'm in my feelings too, JP. We should have lost to the Browns, man. I'm upset about that too, man. So I'm with you, bro. But it's all good, man. Mr. Robert Ford is probably flying high right about now with his team. So how you doing this evening, bro?
Well, you know, of course, and I'm not trying to rub it in on JQ or anything, but obviously feeling good after the win today.
Oh, my God.
Feeling good. But LSU, even though they won last night, they look kind of sloppy in doing it. But, you know, you got the win. Pelicans got a big win. But my fantasy football teams this week, man, are awful. And it looked like I might have lost to both of you all in various leagues. But looked like it might come out the win with a win in fantasy basketball. But nevertheless, we got more sports talk than Van Camp has pork and beans. So we're going to get into it tonight.
Well, that's some fun. And for some reason, apparently it looks like JQ has dropped. So hopefully JQ will call back in. And we'll get him back, as we always have to do, too. So, anyway, there he is.
Hey, I wasn't going to talk too bad about the game, JQ.
I messed up. My bad. He's really in his feelings right now. Oh, man. Hey, all right, fellas. Again, we're going to just throw out the numbers, and we'll get the Oregon Sports Report, as we always like to get in, Gary and Curtis. So, really quickly, to call into the show, call your boys. The number is always the 424-243-9519. That's the number. Follow us on Twitter, the Twitter, as they say, at the number 12, THMAN Sports. That's how you follow us. Find us on Facebook. If you go to facebook.com/12thmansports or Talking Sports with the 12th Man, you'll be able to access all of our details. Gary, Curtis, JQ, Dre, Rob. That's how we always like to get this party started on this Sunday, the 11th. All right, Rob, you want to turn it over to Gary and Curtis at the set the stage for our Oregon sports report, if you will?
Yes, yes. If Gary and Curtis and you're on, I'm actually taking a peek at this Celtics-Blazers game. We got a tight one going in the fourth quarter here. Blazers with a two-point lead. Blazers surprisingly sitting in second place in the Western Conference in the NBA. I know we've talked about this before, but the way they lost in the playoffs last year, I kind of thought they may be somewhere tinkering around eighth place in the West, even though there's still a lot of basketball to be played. If you guys want to give us a quick update on that game.
Well, yeah, I see that they had a big lead. Blazers, I think at one point, were up by 16 or 17 points against the Celtics. But, you know, Celtics are a good team, probably the best, arguably the best team or one of the best teams of the East. So I didn't think it was going to last. I knew it was probably going to end up being a nail biter. We're hoping for the best here. But Curtis, what do you got on that?
Well, I always worry about hot shooters.
when it comes to the Blazers and this year. And if Kyrie Irving is not going to miss a shot in the fourth quarter, we're going to see the Blazers lose.
Well, we're hoping for the best because we've got our sharpshooter in there too with Damian Lillard. I know that C.J. McCollum hit a couple of nice shots there right before halftime. So here we are with the Blazer Report. So, Curtis, you want to give us an update on your thoughts on the college football this weekend?
Another issue with the Ducks and the slow starts in hostile territory. They went to it was in Salt Lake City, and the Ducks in the first quarter looked horrible. And at the end of the second half, it looked like they were going to get in that game. In the third quarter, and going into the beginning of the fourth, they caught up. But that defense just couldn't hold on. And not only did they catch up, they took a lead. And the defense couldn't hold on. They let Utah run right down their throats, right into the end zone, right when time was running out. And but I think this is coaching, and this is Mario Cristobal's first year of coaching in the Pac-12. We're going to give him a pass this year because he needs to realize and he needs to learn that when you go into these hostile territories in the Pac-12, they're no joke. You really have to have your teams ready to take on that crowd and take on that team right when the gun starts. And he has to learn that. He has to learn that. This coach, because I think it all comes down to coaching. The coaches have to know that.
Curtis, what's your thoughts on the Oregon State game?
Oregon State is, you know, still doing the best they can. And one of my thoughts with Oregon State, as they sit in the Pac-12, they are probably the hardest place to recruit to because you got two schools in the L.A. area. You got a school in Seattle. You got two schools in the Bay Area. You got a school that's right outside of Salt Lake City. Washington State's in Pullman, another really hard place to recruit to. And Oregon State is in a place called Corvallis, Oregon. It's about an hour outside of Portland, Oregon, but it's its own little one-horse little spot. And, you know, you're a kid coming to the Pac-12, you're looking at, well, do I want to go to L.A.? Do I want to go to Seattle? Do I want to be in the Bay Area? Or do I need to be in the middle of the week? And Phil Knight and Nike have, you know, they're one of the global companies. They're a big global company. So if you go to Eugene, you're playing for a global brand. You're playing for Nike, and Nike stands to grow. So Oregon has that advantage. But Corvallis don't have none of those kind of advantages.
Corvallis is all right.
Well, one of the things I look at when I'm looking at these Oregon earlier this year looked like a strong contender in the Pac-12, but now they're falling off with a 3-4 record in the Pac-12. Now they're second to last in the Pac-12 North. And so actually Oregon is second to last in the Pac-12 North, and Oregon State is actually in last place. So not looking too good for the two Oregon schools up there in the Pac-12 North. But Oregon is the one that's still surprising to me because, you know, you have Justin Herbert, who a lot of experts think will be the number one pick or the number one quarterback picked in the draft as well. And so that one's a little bit surprising. But it looked like the Pac-12 North is going to come down to the Apple Cup of Washington State and Washington. Obviously, Washington State is one loss in the conference, and Washington has two losses. So it looked like that North Division is going to come down to those two teams. But, I mean, that's the interesting point about the recruiting aspect. But if Washington State could get the players, why can't Oregon State get the players? And I guess it's just going to come down to some creative recruiting. I mean, Oregon State at one time was able to recruit GP, are you with me, Gary Payton there at Oregon State. So you think it's the coaches, or you really just think it's the area in Oregon?
Right now, like I said, there are some really, really good coaches in the Pac-12. If you look on paper and you look at the coaches that it came back to the Pac-12 to start coaching these universities in the Pac-12, you see some really sharp, great guys in coaching. Now, to Oregon State's credit, they got a hometown boy. They got a guy that was under the tutelage down there at Boise State and also went with Chris Peterson up there at Washington. And he's a kind of a Corvallis hometown hero. Now, this is his first year here also. Just like Cristobal, this is his first stint as being a head coach in the Pac-12. And the recruiting aspect and how you prepare a team to go out and go into hostile territory, in my opinion, is coaching. And it's what the program brings to you. Now, Oregon State, they are a big family. They have won some baseball championships. Even this last year, they won the College Baseball World Series at Oregon State. So they're not a slouch, but we got a new coach. Let's give him 3 years. Let's see his creative recruiting. Let's see him make mom and dad at home bringing their kids to Corvallis and taking care of these kids and getting some of these kids. In the West, our biggest recruiting areas are California and Texas. Most of the teams in the Pac-12 are getting kids out of California and Texas. Sprinkle them in, they got to get a bunch of kids out of Hawaii up here too.
Well, appreciate you guys for that report, Andre and JQ. Anything else on Oregon report before we move on?
No, I think
I'm
good.
Go ahead, Curtis or Gary.
Let me say something real quick.
Sure.
I was at the game. I was at the game for the Portland Timbers, Seattle.
Oh wow!
And remember we talked to It might have been the greatest soccer game I've ever seen.
Wow.
Really? It was amazing. It was amazing being up there. They got over 50,000 people up there. And because Seattle had to score more goals than Portland, it put Seattle behind the eight ball a little bit. And Portland defended. Seattle scored goals on two big-time Portland mistakes. Two big time, one by the goalie and one by another guy. If you don't have the ball out of the box, you're in a lot of trouble. When the ball comes into the box, that ball for the defense has to get out of the box, that 18-foot area around the goal. And there was failures on that, and Seattle jumped on those. The good thing was that Portland was able to do real quick counterattacks and get balls in the goal. But the game came down to penalty kicks. And I saw a goalie make a huge mistake to cost us a goal. And then at the end of that game, I saw the Portland goalie jump out of his skin to block two of Seattle's penalty kicks to win that game.
Wow. And that's, and like I said, too, for those that, yeah, go ahead, Rob. I'll let you finish it up. Go ahead.
I was just going to ask, so where does this set them up as far as the season? And was that a playoff game, am I correct?
Yes, that was the quarter to quarters. Now they're going to go into the finals of the Western Conference. And I just heard just now that Salt Lake City, who was the best team in the league this year, Portland will be up against the best team in soccer for the Western Conference Final. That's
they
the final.
That one.
Now, Now, when they if they can go to the final, they're going to play one of the teams out of the East, the New York Red Bulls or the Atlanta. The Atlanta's got a great team on the East side, too.
Atlanta United. And the Atlanta United, yep.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. I was at that game today.
Yep, yep, go ahead.
And so, there's, you know, there's get past this, and then they're in the championship.
Yeah, we're going to
awesome.
Have to
well, we certainly...
go against that, Robin. I'll let you finish the thought, you know, being Atlanta United. But go ahead, Robin. Coach, say what you're going to say real quick.
No, I was just going to say, thank you guys for that reporting. And keep us posted on that Western Conference final matchup. But I know Andre and JQ probably have some insight on the Atlanta United and how the Eastern Conference is going.
Good. Well, we appreciate it. And also we wanted to say to all the veterans out there, we appreciate what you do.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much for your service.
Yeah.
Yes,
know,
we definitely echo that.
The Marines. Yeah, and the Marines had a birthday on Saturday, too. So a lot of happy birthday Semper Fi to the Marines, if you will. It was great to I actually DJed a wedding on Saturday, and he was a colonel in the Marines, so it was good to see how high he was in this respect to the military. I got a ton of family in the military as well, too. So we echo that. I know Veterans Day is tomorrow, so by the time we get finished with our show, it'll actually be Monday, so we want to show a lot of love to them as well, too. So just really quickly, I'll start about Atlanta United, and I'll let JQ finish up. You know, obviously, we didn't get that first part, the first supporter show, so this is kind of our second go. So hopefully we'll get that second championship here, or try to do something here, because, again, a little disappointed from that perspective. But, yeah, like I said, if it's a crash course to see Portland to the Timbers, that would be awesome to actually to get a chance to see them play, too. So anything you want to add to that, JQ?
Not too much more. It's just a fantastic atmosphere today with the United winning 3-1. And advancing to the finals. The United with Martinez they're dangerous. They just play an exciting brand of soccer. I'm just all just vibrating today. So we'll see what goes there. They've been really good all year long, and you know I'm hoping they can keep advancing.
You do.
I'm trying.
All
to
right.
Play.
I know. You know what? I know exactly how you're feeling, bro. Whenever I was dealing with Rob that one game, man, I was on my feelings too, man. So it's all good, man. We'll try to I know exactly how you feel, man. All right, let's get to some football here. We got to talk Lions and Bears. Go ahead, Rob. Set us up, bro.
Oh, well, I mean, the Bears is a team right now that's, a team you got to have to start respecting here. And you're starting to see Mitch Trubisky start to grow right before our eyes here. Obviously, second-year quarterback, highly drafted quarterback. So this is obviously what the Bears were looking for when they picked him. But another great day for him today. If I'm not mistaken, he had four touchdowns total. He had three passes and one he ran in for a touchdown as well. So a nice 34-22 victory for the Bears. They were all up on the Lions, I believe like 29-0 or something like that on this game early on. Obviously, the Lions got some points late. But Mitch Trubisky, outstanding game, three touchdown passes, ran another one in. Big win for the Bears. Khalil Mack, also another big day, two sacks. For their defense. They're a team you're going to have to start looking at. And obviously it's looking like, I think they have a half-game lead over the Vikings in the North. And obviously the Packers got a win today, and we'll talk about them in a little bit here in the show as well.
Yeah, man, the return of the Mack, Khalil Mack, the difference that he makes when he's out there healthy. He wreaked havoc. I think it was 26 out there, I may be wrong. And then they kind of off the gas as all NFL teams do when they get a big lead when they try to just kill the clock. I was just trying to figure out what was going on with that backfield. To have Tariq Cohen lining up on the goal line, we had Jordan Howard. I was like, Jordan Howard owners was like, what's going on in Chicago, really? But outside of that, if you're talking about just, nitpicking from a fantasy standpoint, that's, stuff they don't care about. But that Bears team, like you said, under the radar, you always have a couple of those teams every year. They go from being a bad team to being a good team, and they definitely are that team. They have Chicago, they have Green Bay, and they have Minnesota's attention. I can tell you that much.
All it takes is one player, doesn't it? Seems like it takes one player to kind of set the stage, man. And that's I love the fact that we were singing "Return of the Mac" during the Today Show. That was hilarious, man. So yeah, good call on that front too. And Curtis, Gary, if you guys have anything to add, just let me know, and then, you know, kind of, you know, add your thoughts. And if not, we'll just keep it moving, as we always like to do, for sure, man. So let us know. All right, gentlemen. So my chagrin, I know, JQ, you're upset about your Bengals, but I'm pretty upset about my Falcons here because, again, freaking just terrible to see the way that, you know, we were pretty much on a nice little streak here. Then, you know, and obviously every game is a tough game too, and, you know, but Cleveland definitely was prepared, and you got your boy Bounty Coach coming back, man. So just that was frustrating as well, man. So I'm not going to talk too much about that. Go ahead, Rob.
Well, I mean, you probably can comment on the game a lot better than I could, but, I mean, just from my thoughts on the game, Baker Mayfield just got off to a hot start today, completed his first 13 passes. I think at halftime he was 12 for 12, 165 yards, two touchdowns, a perfect rating of 158.2, so probably his best day in his short rookie career. And then Nick Chubb, oh, my goodness. But 158 yards rushing is plus the 90-something yard run he had in the game as well. So that was a big play, 92-yard touchdown run by Nick Chubb. And there was one play in the game where the Falcons on the goal line here, and Matt Ryan could have probably ran it in with ease. And so, I mean, you have to wonder about that play as well. But other than that, this, you know, Cleveland has had a topsy-turvy season. They've had some games where they've, you know, looked really good. And Greg Williams has put together some really good defensive packages, and today was just one of those games where they had, you know, most everything clicking today. But the two rookies really shined today for them, Mayfield and Chubb.
Yeah, I mean, you touched on most of the stats. I just look at it from an Atlanta standpoint. When you're getting healthy and you get on that run and you look at that schedule and you see Cleveland, even though it's at Cleveland, you got to feel like that's the game that we're supposed to win, that we have too much talent to lose to a rookie quarterback. And they just, I mean, they got beat. I mean, was it 28-10? I mean, that was a sound game by Cleveland, you know, against a high-powered offense in Atlanta that they really pretty much controlled for most of the game. It was surprising. It's just one of those games that pop up within the NFL every week where you're like, wow, did that just happen? And that puts a real dent into the momentum that Atlanta was building.
100%. I just heard this because, you know, we're distracted from the Bruce Irvin signing. We're all excited, and the next thing you know, that happens, man. So pretty disappointed from that perspective. But like you said, JQ, just unbelievable, man. So I didn't watch a lot of highlights, man. You know, whenever you get mad, whenever something happens, you're like, SportsCenter goes off, no game they highlight. Oh, that happens, man. You just kind of sit back and just are in a funk, man. So it's all good from that perspective. Let's talk about our rivals here, the Redskins at the Buccaneers. Let's set it up, Rob.
Well, I think the number one key to this game was the four turnovers by Tampa Bay. The two INTs, the two fumbles, you know, really hurt Tampa Bay in this ball game. The Redskins didn't really do much offensively. And, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick, you know, had a lot of yards today throwing the football, but obviously the turnovers is really what hurt them in this football game. Like I said, the Redskins forced two interceptions, two fumbles, and now they're sitting in 6-3. Leading the NFC East. And, you know, as of right now, the Cowboys are leading 27-20 over the Eagles. So they could possibly have a two-game lead if Dallas wins this game.
Yeah, and I told you about Fitzpatrick. He looks good, and he has those games where he does stuff like that. And you know, when he came against the Bengals, he could do no wrong. And then against that game against Washington, you know, he moved the ball officially. I think they had, like, three really long drives in that first half that I was watching on Red Zone. He had the interception and the turnovers. It's what Tampa Bay does right now. I don't know what's going on with them right now, but it permeates throughout that organization. But Fitzpatrick is who I thought he was. And you're going to get those really good, you know, games that, you know, that strike out. And you're like, oh, and then you're going to get these clunkers. And you got a Fitzpatrick clunker, and they lost.
Probably the best defensive game Tampa Bay played this year, but – yeah, as you said, JQ said it from the beginning of the season, don't eat the cheese with Fitzpatrick. And it turned out to be right.
Don't eat the cheese. Oh, man, it's disappointing, to say the least. All right, let's keep it moving here. Let's talk about, as much as I hate to talk about this, man, let's do the Saints and Bengals. And I'll let you spout off. If you want to spout off on this one first, JQ.
Yeah, I don't have a problem doing it. Like, I mean, I was talking about it. It was not on TV, because the Falcons and the Browns were on. And that was cussing. And I almost gave it a second of thought of putting my gear on and going to a bar around the corner that I know has a ticket so I can watch the game. And then the rational Jaquan said, "Are you crazy? They're probably going to be destroying this game. We ain't going out to a bar to watch this game." And sure enough, the Saints come out and do whatever they want at any point in time in that game. If you were a Bengals fan, you had any notions this over. They have lost 96-24 against the Chiefs and the Saints. 96. The same college. 96-24 in two games. 51 to the Saints today and 45 to the Chiefs a couple weeks ago. It's embarrassing. I give the Saints all the credit in the world. They just came out and just destroyed Cincinnati from the word go. Sean Payton in there vandalizing the stadium, breaking the fire alarm to wake his team up. You know, I was like, come on, man. Mm-hmm. You got to put a motivational speech on or something. You just can't break the fire alarm. But he did it, and it worked. So they came out fired up. They were throwing eggs up to Dez. And, I mean, Alvin Kamara, Mark Ingram, Drew Brees, Michael Thomas, which I hate to, you know, root against him as an Ohio State fan, but those guys just did everything they wanted to do today against the Bengals with little opposition.
Yeah, not sure what's going to come out of that with Sean Payton breaking the fire alarm. We'll have to see if he gets in any trouble with that with the league or the authorities there in Cincinnati. I heard about that as well. But from the football side of it, as JQ mentioned, I actually thought the game was going to be somewhere. I kind of thought the Saints would win. Basically, we predicted the game on last week, too. But I thought it would be a little bit closer and be a bit more of a shootout. I actually played Andy Dalton in some of my leagues because I thought it would be a shootout. But boy, was I wrong. And but yeah, the Saints probably most complete game of the season today. And to see them being able to do it on the road in all three phases of the game, they were able to force a few turnovers. Cincinnati was down 27 right before the half and was looking like they was going to drive and get some points right before the half with at least a field goal or possibly a touchdown. They threw an INT. Marcus Williams runs it back almost 80 yards and it sets the Saints up for another touchdown right before the half and go up 35-7. And that almost sealed it at that point in the game. And thankfully, the Saints can run the football now. I mean, Mark Ingram had over 100 yards rushing. Kamara had a big day running the football. And they were able to eat up a lot of clock in the second half. And even Taysom Hill running the football as well. They were just able to eat up a lot of clock and finish the game out strong in the second half. But, you know, a real strong victory for the Saints today.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. 8 games in a row now for Saints, who longest active streak in the league right now.
Gary Curtis, you guys want to jump in? Please jump in as needed too. If you want us to. All right. So this is the game they're probably jumping on. The Chargers at the Raiders. So yeah, we'll start it to our West Coast fellas and see what you got to say about that game, guys. Always.
Yeah, the Chargers showed me something last week when they beat up Seattle. The Raiders, it might just be a lost season for the Raiders. John Gruden might. So.
Go ahead.
The Chargers, what they showed me in Seattle with Russell Wilson was the Chargers showed me a pass rush. And if you're going to do one of my favorite things that happened today, if you're going to beat Tom Brady in the AFC, you better have a pass rush. You better have that man running for his life. And what they showed me up in Seattle with Russell Wilson is that San Diego has that capability. And then they have a Hall of Famer. They got a guy that's going in the Hall of Fame at quarterback. They're a team that, I don't know if they can do it, but they got the capability of coming out in the AFC. They really do.
Ooh, wait, you got Philip Rivers in the Hall of Fame?
I got.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Well, I think Philip Rivers, he's a good quarterback. I don't know if he's Hall of Fame worthy. Today was 18 of 26 for 223 yards, which is
you know, about what he's doing in with his game in this stage of his career. I think Melvin Gordon's a, you know, stud running back. And, you know, he you know, like today he averaged 5.2 yards a carry. If you can do that, well, that's a recipe to win. And then you're playing a team that's really playing for a first, you know, for a draft pick. They're not playing for anything but that. So I think I didn't expect them to do anything but crush the Raiders today. It was no surprise whatsoever.
Yeah, what you're seeing from the Chargers is they are playing a really good defense, too. And when they get Nick Bosa back, defensively they're going to be really, really scary. And as Curtis mentioned, the pass rush, if they're getting a good pass rush without Bosa, wait till they get Bosa. It's going to be really, really scary. But offensively, I still wonder if they're going to be able to compete with the Chiefs as far as putting up points, because they're not putting up a lot. Melvin Gordon is having a fantastic season, as Gary talked about, and he really was the guy that really led them to victory offensively today. He led the team in rushing today with 93 yards. He also led the team in receiving with 72 yards. So he did it all for them on offense today and got them the 20-6 victory. Their defense is going to have to really shine when they play the Chiefs, and I would like to see them be able to get a little bit better offensively if they're going to be able to beat the Chiefs in the AFC. It's looking more and more likely that the Chiefs are the team to beat in the AFC and not the Patriots. As you saw today, we're going to get to that game a little bit. But the Patriots, their receivers are struggling to get separation. And obviously not having Gronk is really hurting them as well. But offensively, they are really hurting as far as getting good separation on anybody. And it looked like they had no answers at the end of that game against the Titans today.
Yeah, and I think you're on the Chargers offense because what's lost in that is that it was 3-3 deep into the second quarter in that game, and then the Chargers started to pull away. You can't score 3 points in the first half against, you know, the Chargers. Against the Chiefs, and we find, like I hasten to say it, after that performance on Thursday, the Steelers and possibly the Chiefs as well. So if you're going to be there, you're going to face one of them probably as the wild card. If you can't catch the Chiefs, you can't have a 3-point first half, especially against the lowly Raiders, and they're, that's it to fail. They are done. They are all about amassing draft picks. If they could trade to more people today, they'd probably do it. That's where they are as a team. So I'm just being honest. And I'll wait on the Patriots talk until we get to that. But yeah, I expect a little bit more offensively out of the Chargers today. But at the end of the day, at WCW, they just kind of keep drafting behind Kansas City, and they get another shot at them here pretty soon.
Good call. All right, so group, so we're going to come back to this because I definitely want to ask, this is a question for the West Coast and for everyone too, a little later on in the show. I'm going to ask you guys about the Raiders. Obviously, I know we're talking about draft picks and little things like that and then moving to Las Vegas in the future here. But table this, think about this. Is Derek Carr the guy? Is he the future for the Raiders? I know that's kind of crazy to ask right about now, but kind of table that and just sit on that, and we'll ask about it too because, you know, right now the way that it's looking – I don't know, and I don't know if that's new. I don't know if that's the Gruden thing or what's happening, because you know it's kind of similar. You know, one head coach makes the quarterback look good, and you know, case in point, you're looking at the LA Rams, and then now you look at the total opposite from Gruden, you know, versus before. And what's wrong with Derek Carr? I'm gonna ask it to Rob. What do you think? Is something wrong with him, or is it coaching? What do you think?
I think it's a lot of things. I think it's, you know, not gelling with the coaching staff, and I also think it's the Raiders personnel as well. But I just saw a kid 2 years ago that looked like he had a really bright future, and it's hard for me to lose sight of that just yet. I still think there might be something there, but he's got to turn the corner here pretty quickly. But I also think a good quarterback can make guys around him better, and I'm not seeing that right now. And so I'm not ready to write him off just yet. I would like to see what he can do possibly in the next year or so. But it just seems like we're just not seeing that player that we saw 2 years ago. And I'm sure some of it has to be him. Some of it has to be the Raiders personnel and has to be coaching as well. But I'm just not ready to write him off just yet.
Wait a minute. But you ready to write off Dak Prescott, who had a good year 2 years ago. But you're not ready to write off Derek Carr. I'm just saying, we're going to do it. We got to be consistent with
Dak
it.
Dak Prescott like never had a great year throwing the football.
Yeah, they were 13-3. I'm still going to get
that. Wasn't because they were. Down, it wasn't down, because he was down, throwing down, the football down. Well. It was because he was because they had a strong running game and a good defense.
We got to agree to disagree. I'm going to say that I'm not impressed with Carr. I think he has regressed. I think he regressed last year, and I think he's still regressing. I don't know if the totality of the hits are starting to catch up to him or if it was a flash in the pan, if he's not putting in the work or whatnot. I'm not saying that he can't reclaim it, but the same way I talk about Prescott, the same way I talk about Mariota, the other young quarterbacks, that's like, okay, I see you have glimpses, but you aren't sustaining it. I'm going to put him in that group as well. And I'm not going to put it just on Gruden, because like I said, last year I felt like he regressed on too. I'll give you that he doesn't have the greatest personnel around him, but he's had some. Him and Cooper weren't doing it last year either as well. And just some of the decision-making in the throws. And it goes beyond the personnel around him. But you still, if you make a good throw, you make the right read, and the dude's not what he's supposed to be or he drops the ball, I'm not going to put that on the quarterback. But watching Carr and some of his progressions on fourth down, he scrambled out and threw the ball in the ground on like 4th-and-3 or something in that game. And I said, what are you doing? At this point, you got to throw it down the field and see if your dude can make a play on the ball. He threw it in the ground, and he had a turnover on downs. That kind of decision-making is why I'm like, I don't know if he is that guy.
West Coast?
He threw it in the ground on 4th down. I mean, just put that move on your head.
Wow, that's horrible.
Yeah.
Yes, he did. Yeah. I watched that play. Like,
Let me ask a question. If you have your choice between Carr, Dak Prescott, or what was the other quarterback we were talking about?
Andy Dalton.
No.
No. That's crazy. Hell no.
I mean,
you know I'm not choosing Andy Dalton.
or Mariota. If I have my choice between Mariota, Dak Prescott, or Carr, I'll go with Mariota.
Wow, that's really tough.
As well.
Yeah, I would probably take Mariota as well, but yeah, those are definitely three quarterbacks that still have some question marks. There's no doubt about it. But I would say I would give the very slight edge to Mariota.
Slight.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah. He played well today, so that's good. So
I just thought of something, and you know, I've watched football for a long time. I remember a Minnesota team back when I thought they were going to go to a Super Bowl that had a lineman die of heat stroke in camp. And having that.
Stringer?
Yeah.
Corey Stringer?
Yeah, Corey Stringer. Yeah, you remember that? That team I thought was going to the Super Bowl. I thought that team was the team to beat. That happened in their camp, and their season was shot. I'm kind of thinking, now I'm starting to think, and I've seen other things like that. And with the Raiders dealing with the move and the loss, you know, the fans in Oakland, you know, were loyal. They were strong. To run out on that community is maybe taking a lot of focus out of playing football in Oakland at this particular time.
Good point. Good point.
That is a very strong point. And you know, I touched on this. I don't know if it was last week's show or the week before that. But you have to look at the financial impact. If you look at the type of players that the Raiders have given away this year, too, obviously with them not getting the support, and I think that could have a large part of it here as well. And they probably won't get back to the financial success compared with the other NFL teams until they move to Las Vegas. And I think that's another reason why they're reducing so much salary here as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good call. All right, gentlemen, we got about 5 minutes here, literally 5 minutes and 50-something seconds here, so we got to keep this party going here. And that was on me. I kind of did a little side note, so I apologize. Really quickly, Rob, let's talk about Le'Veon Bell, his status with the Steelers. I guess he's done playing and taking shots in Miami. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, well, it looks like he's not coming back to the Steelers. And personally, you know, JQ may not want to hear this, you know, but if you're a Steelers fan, I think it's good for that team because I think coming back right now would be a huge distraction for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And so I think this is a good thing. At the end of the season, you know, you part ways. Le'Veon Bell is a free agent, sign wherever he wants to go. You know, obviously we have to see what kind of shape he's in after sitting out an entire season. You know, hopefully he's, you know, taking care of himself. But there are some teams out there that can benefit from Le'Veon Bell's services. You know, I know one team we talked about was the Colts. And you're talking about a team that's, you know, hitting their stride right now. They've won three in a row, the Indianapolis Colts. Andrew Luck looking like the Andrew Luck of old. They're putting up a lot of points every week. So there's some teams out there that could benefit from Le'Veon Bell's services that he's going to be able to help and possibly help get over the top. And but I think for the Steelers right now, this is a blessing in disguise. Part ways, move on, and you don't have the distraction. And James Conner has now become your guy.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, he's going to be, what, 26 or 27 going into this. Now, I mean, the Steelers, I think, can still transition tag him, maybe still be able to recruit a little something for him. But I agree with you. When the offensive linemen come out and say that about him in week, like, one or two, and everybody said, you know, we need volunteers, we don't need hostages, I mean, that team has moved on from Le'Veon Bell. I think Le'Veon Bell loves those dudes enough to know that he would be a distraction coming back. So he's just saying, okay, you know, this is over for him, but he's still going to, you can look at the flip side of it. He's taking care of himself. That means he has fresh legs. And depending on where a team is in terms of the salary cap structure, his receiving as well as his running can help put a team that's close over the top if they can fit him into their locker room, into their structure, salary cap wise. So I think this is the point where he lost a whole lot of leverage because Conner has done so well at this point. There's no need to come and try to fight that locker room. I love if you would do it, fracture it, you know, break it all down to be damned. But I don't think the Steelers are going to let that happen to the locker room. I really don't.
Good call. It's such a strange situation, man. It's one of those just things. It's just crazy. All right, Rob, we got 3 minutes and 27 seconds here. We're going to talk about Aaron Rodgers and Mike McCarthy. Will they part ways? And then I guess probably we'll set up the OT portion because that's a good time to talk about some NFL predictions. So go ahead and talk about this really quickly as we got like 3 minutes left in the live show.
Well, I think when you look at the Packers, obviously they had a big win today, 31-12, over the Miami Dolphins at home to get back on track. I know we don't have Big Mike with us tonight. He probably can give us some insight into this too. But just looking at the Packers' schedule here the remainder of the season, I mean, they go at Seattle next, and Seattle, they've been playing really competitive football. They're in just about every game. I mean, they lost to the Rams today down the stretch. That's going to be a tough game for Green Bay to go on the road and win. And if I had to make a prediction, I like Seattle. And then they go at Minnesota, and that's going to be another tough game for the Packers to win. So I would pick the Vikings. Then they at home against the Cardinals and at home against the Falcons. I would think the Packers will win those two games. And then they go at Chicago. That's a game I think the Packers will lose to. And I think the Packers go on the road to the Jets. They beat the Jets. And then they finish the season at home against the Lions. That's the game they should win. So in their last seven games, I'm going to say they're going to go 4-3, which is going to have them at 8-7-1, which more than likely won't have them in the playoffs this year. And that'll be, if I'm not mistaken, at least 2 years in a row. It will be 2 years in a row the Packers will miss the playoffs there. So it's a very good chance that they could part ways. And it's going to be McCarthy. It's not going to be Rodgers that's going to be going here. So I think it's a really good chance that McCarthy goes. But I do think McCarthy will get another job, especially a team with a young up-and-coming quarterback, possibly Cleveland. I was going to say that. Possibly Cleveland could be that team. But if they finish 8-7-1, which I think they will, I think McCarthy is definitely going.
Rob, go ahead, Rob, really quick before we get started. Set up OT portion. We've got like a minute to go. We've got a minute and 20 seconds. Go ahead and do it.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we still have more sports talk. As I said in the beginning of the show, we got more sports talk than Van Camp has pork and beans. So we still got a lot more to talk about here going forward here. We still got more NFL. We got some NBA. We got some college football here we're going to talk about. So we can't give you the OT portion of the show live. Click on the same link tomorrow or any day this week and get the rest of our show. I promise you won't be disappointed. Give us some feedback if you agree with us or disagree with us. We would love to hear from you people. Thanks for tuning in. Good night.
Yeah, your boy is going to be all
next
right.
Next show,
you know,
I'm sorry.
Sorry, go ahead.
I apologize. Next show is going to be on Tuesday, November 20th. So not next Sunday, but 2 days after that on Tuesday night, November 20th, 11 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Pacific. For our friends in Hawaii, aloha, will be 5 p.m. I'm sorry, JQ.
Oh, no, I wasn't going to say nothing, but I'll be all right. I'm used to my team getting kicked in the mouth, and we'll bounce back. I appreciate everybody for calling in and listening to the show and providing the feedback. And we'll holler at y'all next Tuesday.
Sounds like a plan. Way to fit that in there, too. Just get it in the gun, too. Yeah, good.
Yeah, that'd be 2 days before Thanksgiving. That'd be a great time. Yeah, it'd be 2 days before Thanksgiving.
Yep.
Tuesday, 20.
Yeah,
we're going to give everybody a little appetizers before the Thanksgiving Day games.
Mm-hmm.
We also did that, too. We have some fun, too, man. We've been doing the show for a couple of years now, so we've always enjoyed giving that little appetizer, as Rob like to say, too. So we are officially into the OT portion. All right, gentlemen. We have to knock out some NFL predictions here. Let's kick it off with the Texans at the Redskins. So, Rob, set us up for this one, bro.
Well, the Redskins are 6-3, but to me, still the most unimpressive 6-3 team in the league. And I like what the Texans have been doing lately. I really do, and I think they're going to go on the road and beat the Redskins. The Texans are getting better on both sides of the football, defensively and offensively. Deshaun Watson, he's starting to see glimpses of what we saw last year before the injury. And of course, DeAndre Hopkins, oh my goodness. He's having an outstanding year. And like I said, defensively, they have some studs on their defensive line. And we talked about the Chargers in their pass rush, but the Texans are another team that has potential to get to the quarterback. So this is a team that I think is surging in the right direction. And like I said, the Redskins are 6-3, but they're the most unimpressive 6-3 team, in my opinion. I like the Texans on the road.
And on top of that, for Washington Dillon, where they just had three season injuries last week. And you talk about the Texans and all the great points. Lamar Miller is still unappreciated, but, quietly holding it down in the backfield. But this bye week, giving Demaryius Thomas another week to not try to cram everything in during the game week, to go in there and hopefully – get in there with John and the coaches and learn the playbook. And you never know. He may have lost a step, but I think outside of Hopkins, we can get a lot more one-on-one, coverage as opposed to getting that double team in Denver, gives, Houston another advantage. And then Cato was also hurt, so you get him a little bit more time to get healthy. That Houston team is trending in the right direction. And if those guys are in there getting treatment and messing with Deshaun Watson over this bye week and learn that playbook in terms of Demaryius Thomas, I think they're going to really be they're going to have to answer them. They may be one of those wild cards or teams that we're not really talking about as much. So I agree. I take the Texans.
Yep.
I don't trust the Redskins, and they're banged up. I'm going to go with John Watson over Alex Smith. You know how I am. If it comes down to that, I'm going to go with the quarterback, and I'm going with Deshaun.
Gary Curtis, you'll hear a familiar theme with JQ. It's all about the quarterback. That's how he takes a lot of his matches, which is hilarious, man. So he's pretty consistent on that front, too. I will say this too, just kind of echo what you guys have said. I kind of agree with you. One thing I'm going to say about the Texans, like we talked about, I definitely am a fan of Deshaun Watson, and you give them an added weapon in Demaryius Thomas, that pretty stout defense, which is pretty crazy as it is. The jury's still out, and this is me. JQ is about quarterbacks. I'm about coaches. I'm not quite sure if O'Brien's kind of the dude, man. So, we'll see, man. We'll see how it plays out. Because I know we'll give him a pass because of what happened to Deshaun Watson. He got hurt, and I know Deshaun's young, but, Bill O'Brien, this is the situation, too. I'm just saying, though. I mean, certain times coaches, there's certain things you can do to kind of prepare your squad, too, man. So that's just something that for Bill O'Brien, you got your window, man, because you got a lot of talent on that squad, too, man. So that's all I'm going to say from that front. Let's keep it going here. And let's talk about another pretty impressive NFC North battle. We've got the Vikings at the Bears. We talked about Mitchell Trubisky. And I think I was watching NFL Today, and they were talking about, a little shout-out to you, Rob, how Mitchell Trubisky and Matt Nagy, they were actually watching Drew Brees, and they're like, this is where, not to put that kind of pressure, but just they're just impressed with how Drew Brees has made all those records. And they're like, this is where you want to be. This is the guy you want to be, man. So. He's looking like he's doing some things, man. So he's going to get the stout Vikings defense. This may be a statement game for him. Rob?
Well, I mean, that's an interesting point. Ryan Pace is the general manager for Chicago Bears. He comes out of the pro personnel department of the Saints. So I'm sure he's, you know, trying to kind of have that same footprint a little bit, you know, working with Sean Payton and Drew Brees for so long while he was with the Saints. But obviously Mr. Trubisky has a long way to go to get to that level, but he's definitely off to a great start this year. And I like the Bears in this one at home. The Vikings, in my opinion, they're not as good as what they were last year defensively. They still have the stud receivers. Obviously, they, the bye week possibly helped them as far as getting Stephon Diggs back healthy. But, you know, he obviously was coming off an injury from last week. So we'll see how that goes. I like the Bears in this one, but I think it's going to be really, really close. I'm going to say 27-24 Bears.
Well, I guess I am setting myself up for fair, but I'm going to road team again. And the reason why is Mike Zimmer. And you talk about Mike Zimmer on a bye week preparing for a young quarterback at Trubisky. He's going to probably throw a whole lot of wild, kick the sink, different exotic seasons at Trubisky. Having 2 weeks to prepare for him, having this bye week here. I just think Minnesota, again, in a very close game. To me, it's one of those pick-ems that you can kind of sway me either way. But if I'm looking at, you know, a defensive-minded coach, you know, with an extra week to prepare for a young quarterback, that Chicago defense is going to keep him in the game. But hitting Diggs back is huge for Rudolph and especially Thielen. I'm going to go ahead and go with Minnesota by like three.
All right. Stay tuned, West Coast. We got you coming whenever we talk about the Rams here. But just to kind of echo that point, Rob, as far as the Vikings, and I know not to, you know, rub it in, you know, JQ, because I figured you thought that Mike Zimmer would be a good coach for the Bengals, man, too. So I just think about that as well,
yes.
Kind of what could have been, man. So tough stuff. Hey, let's talk about the Chiefs at the Chiefs at the Rams here. Another really – this is going to be a really great game, man, if you will, man. So you talk about just kind of – this they some could be a Super Bowl preview as well. You never know, man. But let's talk – you know, I don't know. We'll say this. Rob, what do you think about this game, this matchup?
This is an interesting matchup. I believe this game is going to be played in Mexico City. So it's kind of going to be a neutral site here. Which I think, the Chiefs are a slightly better team. I really do, and because if you look at the last few weeks, the Rams have really, really struggled defensively, and I know they've gone against, obviously going against the Saints. You know, I mean that's understandable, but today you even give up 31 points to the Seattle Seahawks, and I mean they're not the offensive juggernaut and. So they've been giving up a lot of points here. I mean, Green Bay, of course, the week before, but it is Aaron Rodgers. But I think they are struggling more on defense than the Chiefs is. And you're starting to see the Chiefs starting to play a little bit better defensively every week, in my opinion. So with this game being on a neutral site, if it was in L.A., I would pick the Rams. But I'm going to pick the Chiefs in the shootout. I'm going to say 40-34. But the Chiefs make a – maybe one or two more plays defensively than the Rams do to win this game.
Yeah, this is a tough one. Actually, I would have went the other way because I feel like the Rams, while they have a better home base in L.A. than the Chargers do, I still don't feel like it's really there yet. As evidence by when Green Bay was in L.A., it was way more Packer fans than it was Rams fans in that game, even though the Rams pulled it out. So I think this one kind of tilts it more to the Rams if the Tennessee fans really travel like that to Mexico City. If I'm the Rams, and Sean McVay is a great offensive mind, I'm going to try to keep Patrick Mahomes on the bench. You know how you do that? You do Todd Gurley to the left, Todd Gurley to the right, Todd Gurley up the middle. If they can do that and they can possess the ball, then they can kind of, you know, shield that defense that you're right has been really weak because Marcus Peters, by God, has been burnt toast. They really need to lead back in the worst way in that secondary. But if I'm the Rams, I don't try to get into a shootout with Kansas City. I feel like that's a loss if they do that. But they try to possess the ball and go on 8 to 10, you know, play drives and keep that force of Kansas City offense on the side. I feel like they can win a close game, but a lower scoring game, more like 28-24 LA.
Well, their last two games. Their last two games. I'm talking about the Rams. You know, they went up. They went again. They went against Drew Brees, phenomenal quarterback. This week they went up against Russell Wilson, also a phenomenal Super Bowl winning quarterback in his own right. You know, and he's so mobile. You know, he gained you know, he gained, I think, 90-some-odd yards. I think he had 10 yards of carry on his run. So he really kept that line, that defensive line of the Rams, you know, because they kind of just threw him off. I think that the Rams are going to beat the Chiefs, and I think they're going to beat them at least by a touchdown.
Ooh. Well, maybe I'm picking the Chiefs because I want them to beat the Rams.
I'm with you, Rob. You make a valid point, but I think I have enough trust in what I've seen from Sean McVay and his play calling, the flow of plays, that where he can spread you out and throw it if he feels like he needs to do that. But if he knows, hey, my defense, I see what's happening, my best chance is to give it to Gurley and kind of do more of a ball position game with it and then sprinkle in some of those down the field shots. So I think that's a more realistic shot for the Rams to win. They can't just line up and say, okay, y'all go wide, we go wide, and last team with the ball wins. I think the Chiefs win that kind of game. So I don't think you're wrong like that when you say that. I think it's another one of those really close pick-em games that if the Chiefs win, I wouldn't be like, oh, I'm surprised that happened. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's definitely a game worth staying up for next Monday night. There's no doubt about that. And I think it's going to be really, really interesting. I think one other point here you got to think about here, it looked like the Rams might be without Cooper Kupp for a while. With the knee injury today. Mm-hmm. I don't know how serious, if it's season ending or if it's just a month or what have you. But more than likely, he will not be playing in that game on next week. So that's a big blow to the Rams' offense, too, losing another weapon like that.
Mm-hmm.
You watching the game, huh? Yeah, you watching the game, too, Lakers and Hawks, aren't you, JQ?
I'm not.
Are you watching this?
Okay. No, I'm
okay.
not. I got all the right, alert.
Okay, all right, all good. Hey, you know, Lakers fan over here. All right, let's get some here. Cam Newton, we talked about some quarterbacks. We've thrown out some Derek Carrs of the world. And now we're going to come around to Mr. Cam Newton. Is he too inconsistent for the Panthers to be successful? West Coast, don't worry, we're going to talk about your boy Dak Prescott too. They're all – I feel like there's like a target here. We're going to hit all these quarterbacks here. But what say you, Rob? I mean, that was a that opened up a can of whoop ass. The Steelers did, and is it Cam? Is it what's happening, man? There's no words, man. So what say you about this, Rob?
Well, I'll just touch on the game really quick. I mean, Carolina went opening drive over about 75 yards and just went right down the field. Mm-hmm. Opening drive went up 7-0. Looked like they were going to have a real strong game. But Pittsburgh, man, Ben Roethlisberger, what, he had 5 touchdown passes, pretty much a perfect game in that night. Even James Conner was kind of quiet in that game. But throwing the football, they just had their way. And it kind of goes back to we finally started to see what we thought we were going to see out of Carolina's defense this year, an aging defense that was going to regress. And we saw it that night in that game. Now, mind you, you know, I always say this, it's always tough for a visiting team to go play on a Thursday night. It's not easy to play a game on Sunday. You got to have a day of rest. You practice one day and then you travel on Wednesday. And, it's really tough for the visiting teams. You have to be really special to kind of go have a game like that and play great on a short week. So I'll give that to the Panthers, but I mean, Pittsburgh just had their way in every which way in this football game. But getting to the question of Cam Newton, you kind of see him having great games. Other than the year they went to the Super Bowl where he was just magnificent every single week. But you kind of see this throughout his career where he have a magnificent game and then he'll come back and just lay an egg. And it's hard to consistently rely on him. Obviously, they're better with him than they are without him. But it's just hard for them to duplicate that success they had a few years ago when he went to the Super Bowl. But I think with him, they will still have more success than not. Yeah, I just think they'll be hard-pressed for them to have another 14-2, 15-1 kind of year. But I think they can consistently have 10-6 kind of seasons with him.
Well, I think they just ran into a bust on Pittsburgh that night. Like you said, the away team always has struggles and going to Pittsburgh, and they were just jacked up And after they, you know, that ill-advised pass for the, you know, pick six, that thing just got rocking, and they just couldn't recover from it. But for me, when I look at for Carolina, you're right, the defense is getting older. But I also look at them in terms of their skill position players on offense. Funches is still really young. Samuel was hurt last year, which is a dislocated ankle. He's coming back. He's young. DJ Moore is a rookie. McCaffrey is still young. I think they are still figuring out, and you're going to have those games, especially with the skill position players, that, you know, they have a lot of highs and sometimes they have some lows. And that Pittsburgh defense is really fast and go sideline to sideline. So they can kind of hang with them in that youth and that speed. And where they also sometimes have an advantage on other teams, they didn't have it against Pittsburgh. And it showed up over the course of those four quarters. So I think, you know, they're going to still have to do some tinkering on offense. You know, Olsen is still pretty good, but, you know, he's a step slower as well. But they're going to need, you know, I don't know if they got to go get a veteran wide receiver or a draft one. It's going to be more in that classic bigger mode. They got a lot of, you know, scat back, kind of H-back slot receivers. They need somebody that can go get it. I don't think Funches is that guy. So that's what I look at in terms of Carolina's offense. I think some of it is on Cam. He's really high. Then he gets really low. He sulks. He's still got to do better at that. But I think he also, you talked about it earlier with the personnel around. They have good personnel. Don't get me wrong. And their personnel is better than most of the other average teams. When you start playing more of the elite teams that can match you on defense, they don't have a guy that can just go get it on the outside. So that's why I think they're lacking right now. But I think Cam will be all right. He's the MVP. He'll be all right.
All right, West Coast. We're going to
start with JQ.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, what I saw, only thing I can think of, and in the NFC, I do think Cam and Carolina are up against it to try to get out of the NFC. And I can't tell you right now who I think's going to get out of the NFC. When we get closer, maybe I can tell you, but there's about six teams in the NFC that can get out and get to the Super Bowl. But what I saw and what I'm emotional about, I want to see Ben Roethlisberger and those Pittsburgh Steelers do that to the New England Patriots and Tom Brady. And I've seen many times when that team hasn't been able to do that kind of thing when it comes to the Patriots. It is time for Pittsburgh to do it. It is time for Tomlin to not get head game with Belichick, head game in Tomlin at a football game, and Pittsburgh lose to those New England Patriots. I saw a game that if they play like that against New England, they should be able to blow New England out. That's what I want to see. I want to see them do that to New England.
I want them to do it to nobody. Let's go Andy Reid.
Wow.
So JQ is the ultimate Steeler hater, you all. So. Well, there you go. Pittsburgh, Mike Tomlin, Curtis is calling y'all out. It's time for y'all to do that to the team like the Patriots. And you're right. They haven't been able to do that against a team like the Patriots, and you know, historically. But I'm real curious to see if the Patriots – are going to be that team to climb their way back in the AFC this year, because when I look at them play right now, they're missing some things. And, it could be that they just need Gronk back, and so we'll have to wait until, you know, he gets healthy and kind of see. But when you start to look at the AFC, you got to talk about the Steelers now. You got to talk about the Chiefs. Possibly got to talk about the Texans. So where does the Patriots fit in that mix right now? So, I mean, we'll see. I mean, they do have Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. That's a team you never write off. And I'm sure, you know, they're going to be back in the mix. But I just saw some wide receivers that just could not get any kind of separation against the Titans today. And I saw a team today, probably the first time I've seen that Tom Brady and Bill Belichick have absolutely no answers in the fourth quarter today.
That's crazy.
Yeah, but they also have time. They're going through a bye, and they're playing the AFC East. So
they
have time to get it together.
So the Steelers, aren't the favorites, right? You don't think they're favorites just yet, right? I mean, right now, this juncture, you don't think they're favorites, right? Okay.
No.
Okay.
No.
Right.
I think it's the Chiefs right now. I really do in the AFC. I mean, even the game they lost to the Patriots at New England, I mean, they put up 40 points in that game. I mean, that's a team that they're going to put up points. You got to outscore the Chiefs every week. And that's going to be tough to do with the way they're playing. One of the top running backs in the league, one of the top receivers in the league, one of the top tight ends in the league, and right now one of the best quarterbacks in the league in the Chiefs, and their offensive line is pretty good. That's going to be tough to beat. I would say as of right now, I would give them the edge over the Steelers in the AFC.
Wow. I agree.
All right. Making moves over here. All right. I know that we are really excited about this. JQ, I'm going to say this. Whenever you watch the replay, that was a goal 10. That's all I'm going to say, man. They freaking gave the Lakers a win. You'll see what I'm talking about later on. All right.
Okay.
Let's see here. Fellas, West Coast Cowboys versus Eagles, if you will. And then we're going to talk about a couple things. We're going to talk about your grade that you would give Dak Prescott because we can kind of tie these two together. And I'm thinking, I guess, as of right now, Rob, is what we're thinking about for this too, man. So interesting game. So at least go ahead and set it up, and we'll let West Coast kind of finish up as always. As I know we got my guy that's a Dallas man over there. Go ahead, Rob.
Well, you look at the Cowboys and the Eagles, these are two teams that have been both have been really up and down and unpredictable this season. Obviously, this was a game I thought the Eagles would win at home, and the Cowboys went in there and got a big road victory. And Dak Prescott, you got to give him some credit. I thought he actually played pretty well tonight. I would give him a B for tonight's game. I think for his career, he's a C-minus as a quarterback. But in this game tonight, a big game, a big road victory, made some nice throws down the field, recognized Ezekiel Elliott in the flat a lot in the passing game. And also Ezekiel Elliott, they got him going in the running game, which they haven't been able to do here in the last couple of weeks. So I think that was important to help Dak Prescott, too, out, as a quarterback as well. Defensively, I thought the Cowboys were solid as well. I mean, to give up 20 points, but I thought overall they were pretty solid in this game as well. So it's a big road victory. It's third straight home loss for the Eagles. Like, wow.
Wow.
Unbelievable. But a big road victory for the Cowboys. And now both the Cowboys and the Eagles are two games back in front of Redskins. That sounds like a lot, but as I just said earlier, I'm still not convinced that the Redskins are a really good team.
Uh-oh. West Coast,
well, we'll see on we'll see on Thanksgiving. We'll be playing the Redskins. The Cowboys will be playing the Redskins on Thanksgiving. I would give Dak Prescott also a B, and I do believe it for his. I think his rookie year was good, but since his rookie year, I think he's been a C minus. I'll definitely agree with that. Today he threw for 270 yards, which is very good for Dak Prescott because he's typically around 150, 160 yards. Zeke was really the key to the game, I think, how he played, and also our new wide receiver,
Amari Cooper.
So,
yep.
You know, with him able to get separation, you know, like that really helped out the other receivers. So I think that was a big win for the Cowboys going in. You know, NFC East is tough because every team seems to, you know, beat each other up. Even when you have teams that are dominant, last year with the Eagles, or in previous years with the Cowboys or the Giants, they always their losses typically are in the NFC East. So with that said, big win for the Cowboys, and we'll see how they do against at home against the Redskins on Thanksgiving.
One of the games they showed today on the Sunday Night Football that impressed me. And I think this is what Dallas likes about Zach. It had Zach and Ezekiel on the bench, in the huddle with the linemen, offensive and defensive, showing leadership and pumping dudes up. You know, hey, you guys, we can win this. Hey, you guys are just as good as they are. You know, hey, you guys, we're coming in their house and we're going to beat these guys up. And if they keep that, I think that's something to look at is, you know, his leadership with the boys, his leadership on the bench, and his positivity on the bench.
because we see some quarterbacks get real negative on the bench. And I don't think that helps the team out.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to go down the road. I watched that game, and he made some good throws, but he made some really bad throws where he was shuffling the feet. He didn't get set. He predetermined where he wanted to go with the ball. Cooper got separation on that down the sideline, and he missed him. Or if it would have been a touchdown, it would have been about a 50-yard game. He just flat out missed him between the quarterback and the safety. And as a starting quarterback, you have to make those throws. But then he can come back and do other things with his legs and his arms. And you're like, okay, the potential is there. So I still give him a C for tonight. I really think tonight, I agree, it was more about Ezekiel Elliott and that defense and not so much about Dak. But for his career, I find it to kind of be the same way. You know, he had an 85-year-old Jason Witten and clearly a 65-year-old Dez Bryant. So I'm trying to give him a chance to have some younger weapons around him on the outside that can produce for him. But, you know, it's a mixed bag for me with him when I watch it. I see the flashes where he makes some good throws and decisions. You know, I see him stare down a wide receiver and almost get a pick six there, backed up in his own end, and then missing Cooper, missing some other throws that, you know, he shouldn't miss. So, you know, I'm a C for him tonight. I'm a C for him right now for his career.
Nice. Okay. All right.
Good job, guys, fellas. Way too elaborate on that point, too, man. That's what we like to hear. All right, we talked about, you know, a polarizing team in the Cowboys that, you know, it's either you love them or you hate them. It's how it always seems to be from that perspective here. Talked about a couple things. I do want to definitely throw in about Dez Bryant because it was an interesting storyline. Had he not been injured at practice, at the Saints practice, when the Saints signed him, and then it's just kind of tragic things. I know he was definitely wanted to show something to his former team. Didn't know, Rob, if he had a lot left in tank as it is, too, but just I hate to see stuff like this, injuries coming out of camp, or coming out, excuse me, not camp, coming out of the practice, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, I wonder what he had left as well. And going forward, I mean, we talked about Dak Prescott and his quarterbacking skills. That was the thing that I wanted to see because he hadn't really put up big numbers with Dak Prescott at the quarterback position. So you wondered what he had left in the tank. I wonder what he had left in the tank. But obviously, you know, big blow. He wasn't going to play today regardless. Because Sean Payton wanted him to lose some more weight and get in game shape. I think he was about 5 to 10 pounds still overweight. So he wasn't going to play in the game today regardless of the injury. But obviously a big blow. And believe it or not, the Saints have some depth issues at the wide receiver position. And, I mean, obviously Alvin Kamara, Mark Ingram, and Michael Thomas, you know, are lighting it up from the offensive standpoint. But after Michael Thomas, your wide receivers is rookie Tre'Quan Smith and Austin Carr. And I don't think too many people around the league know who they are. And those are your wide receivers for the Saints. But I will say this, Drew Brees does an unbelievable job, you know, making guys that are average look pretty good. Even one of the tight ends, Dan Arnold, had a big catch today. Who heard of Dan Arnold before? We signed a guy off the practice squad today, Kirk Kirkwood. He go down the field and catch a bomb today in the game. So Drew Brees has the ability to make some average receivers look pretty good. And Tre'Quan Smith, the rookie, he had 2 touchdowns against the Redskins. And he had 1 last week against the Rams. So he's starting to come on a little bit, a guy with some good potential, good speed. But and that's why the Saints went out and signed Dez Bryant. Just try to give him some more depth at the wide receiver position. Cameron Meredith, they had to place him on IR. They placed Ted Ginn on IR this year. So there's some talk about them possibly signing Brandon Marshall this week. So we'll see how that goes.
Heard about that.
Yeah.
There's Brian hanging out with Rob Ford too much.
My own thing is if you know he's overweight, then why would you even let him be going through those kind of drills until he has that down because he's overweight and hasn't played? That's a recipe for injury. But that's neither here nor there. His impact on his teammates already. I mean, they all got up every time they scored and threw the X up for him. And to me that, you know, Dez gets a lot of bad criticism and sometimes just we throw the abrasion upon himself. But a team that you haven't even played a game with yet, that you just got in there for this week, and they are all throwing up your signature, you know, dance or move after they score a touchdown, to me speaks volumes even about what they talked about him, even though he was already hurt and probably never going to play with them. So to me that was a little, you know, but that it was surprising, not in a bad way, but in a good way that you know that gets a, you know Dez gets a lot of flack, But those guys all seem to be all around him getting hurt today. So, you know, in terms of that, that was a positive for him. And I think that was a positive for his perception around the league that those guys cared that much about somebody they only had, you know, in the door for a week.
Yeah, you're right. That's a really good point. And, you know, Mark Ingram and Alvin Kamara and Michael Thomas, they interviewed all three of those guys, and they talked about that, about how great of an impact he had on the team in just 3 days from a leadership perspective, and how they would like for him to stick around even while he's rehabbing. And so, I mean, that was a really nice story for the way they showed him a lot of love.
Good call. All right, let's keep this going here. Rob, you mentioned this game earlier, Patriots versus Titans, and just a game where, wow, Titans, who would have thought that the Titans are making some hay here? I'm sorry, West Coast, as they kind of put a number on the Cowboys, but looks like, wow, we talked about Mariota too, man. He looks like he's coming to his own too, Rob.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Titans pulled out everything in this game. I mean, they were throwing passes to Mariota in this game, and they pulled out all the stops to beat the Patriots today. And as I talked about earlier, the Patriots looked like they had absolutely no answers, and you've never seen that from a Belichick-Brady combination. They had absolutely no answers at the end of that game in the second half today, particularly in the fourth quarter. They couldn't figure out how to do anything defensively or offensively. And the Jim Morrow quote could have applied to them in this. We couldn't do diddly-poo offensively or defensively. And that's what the Patriots wound up doing in this game today. They couldn't do diddly-poo on either side of the football, and it really cost them in this game. Either that or Bill Belichick is tanking when he's going against his former players or coaches, because he did the same thing as the Lions and Matt Patricia this year and now against Mike Vrabel today.
Yeah, see, here we go. Conspiracy Bob. The Titans just punched New England in the mouth. Right? I mean, they were the more physical team today. They ran the ball up, and they went always for big yardage in the beginning, but they stayed with it. They just beat them up in those routes that you don't really see cornerbacks be able to do nowadays. But they did it to them today, especially without Gronk. The thing that stuck out to me is the fact that they pulled Tom Brady with about 5 or 6 minutes left when they were down 24. And I was just surprised at that because I've never seen them pull him, you know, outside of being up a big amount. But they didn't even, like you said, Rob, no answers. They didn't have a belief that they could even do anything with him. That with 5 or 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter, you pull Tom Brady and put him on the bench, you know. And, I mean, yeah, they would have had to do something miraculous, and don't get me wrong, but it wasn't like it was a 40-point game where it was like, okay, there's nothing to be done. Like, there's, you know, you always have that belief. They feel like they have that belief in themselves and in Tom Brady. So to see him get pulled, to me, was really shocking.
Absolutely. And the Titans, like Andre just said, they're quietly back above 500. They're 5-4, game behind the Texans in the AFC South. And you look at the AFC South right now, the team we thought was going to win this division, the Jaguars, look like the worst team in the division now. And
crazy.
The Texans are playing well. The Titans are quietly playing well. And the Colts have won 3 in a row. So you look at those three teams right there, you're starting to get an interesting-looking division now in the AFC South.
Gotcha.
Yeah. What a division. And, you know, it's going to be exciting down the line to see who comes out of that. But, you know, my gold standard is always going to be the Patriots. Who's going to beat them Patriots? I always have skin in the game every year with the Patriots. And I always win when they don't make it to the Super Bowl.
That's a stretch pick right there, man. Nah, we'll see how it plays out, man. As always, man. All right, we're going to talk. Rob, let's go into the fantasy shout-outs here real quick, sir.
Yeah, now these fantasy shout-outs are from last week. Obviously, we had the show on last Sunday. It was right in the middle of the week. So these fantasy shouts are from last week. Obviously, we're still right in the middle of action for this weekend's game. We'll start with fantasy basketball, the biggest wins last week. Will in Madison, Wisconsin, his team, I'm So Harden, with a 7-1 victory over Andre's team, triple-double. And also Matthew in Indianapolis, and Naptown Unibrows, 7-1 over Madhouse on Madison. I'm So Harden with a 21-3 record. Will from Madison again in first place. In fantasy football, league number one, Sean in Atlanta had the biggest win of the week, Purple and Gold Patrol, over Big Fast and Strong, 144.02 to 109.16. Crystal in Albuquerque, New Mexico, Eagles Chick for Life in first place with a 7-2 record. League number two, Chester from New Orleans, Hunk Smash with a 166 to 99.64 victory over ATL Black Belt. Hunk Smash also is in first place in that league with an 8-1 record. League number three, my co-host Andre's team, Andre's Rise Up Falcons, with a 170.94 to 88.88 over Kraken. And Matthew in Indianapolis has first place team Unger's Crew at 9-0. Perfect. League number four, Andre's team again with a perfect with the biggest win, 277.50 over his wife. Baby got back backfield 146.44. Poor Andre had to sleep on the sofa all week, beating his wife that bad. Beat his wife by over 133 points. And Andre's team's also in first place in that league with a 7-2 record. So thank you all for competing again with us this week. And those are your fantasy shout-outs. Still a lot of football and basketball to be played.
Thanks, better be glad that I had a wedding because I totally didn't set my line. That's why he had a 7-1, man. So I was like, oh, man, it was rough, man. I was supposed to get that, man. So it's all good. Hey, let's kick to some basketball, man. Pacers at the Rockets. Go ahead, Rob.
What?
Well, you look at this game tonight, it was all about James Harden. He was the stat sheet stuffer, particularly with the 40 points, and, you know, had a big game. Rockets got off to a slow start this year, and maybe they are starting to turn it around here a little bit, get back up to like 5-7. And, I mean, they were like 1-4, 1-5 for early part of the season. But 40 points, 7 rebounds, and 9 assists in this game, 115-103 victory over the Pacers. And as I talked about, they're in 12th place in the Western Conference right now with a 5-7 record. So they're getting close to getting back to 500.
Yeah. I'm more interested in the drama here with Carmelo Anthony. Whether or not they're going to waive him, you know, he's out with illness, and they're talking about, they discussed his role, and they are maybe even thinking about parting ways with him, you know, and that to be, you know, what, 11 games into the season or 12 games into the season, that's amazing that they're willing to pull the plug or even float that idea out in the media, that they're willing to pull the plug so shortly into that. It's fascinating to watch in the NBA, you know, always has a little drama.
Yeah, it's interesting. It almost seems like wherever he goes now, there's seems to be an issue.
Mm-hmm. It's not us, bro.
Look in the mirror.
And I guess that's why LeBron James wanted no part of him with the Lakers.
Mm-hmm. It ain't over. If they waive him, we'll see. I don't trust that completely, so it's not an option.
Where did Lakers stand?
Did you guys see?
Good.
Yeah. Did you guys see that Milwaukee is doing a West tour, and Milwaukee came into Portland, and I saw a lot out of the Portland Trail Blazers when they beat Milwaukee. That was a really good game for them. But then the next day, or the next 2 days after that, Milwaukee went down to Golden State and gave them a what for?
Yeah.
And Milwaukee, I think they got a pretty good team. But I was surprised that Milwaukee was able to go down there in the Bay Area and get that team.
System.
And I think Steph Curry got hurt. He was hurt in that game, too.
Yeah,
both of them. Wow, LeBron James got a dunk at the end of the game to beat the Hawks?
Well, you saw the goaltending, bro. Wait till you see the goaltending the next play, man. That was terrible, man. Of course, they're not going to let that happen, man. They're not going to recall that play, man. That was crazy because Trae Young goes in, has a that's a little dropped, and I guess it looked like a goaltending call, but it was waved off. So terrible.
It was very close. I'm looking at it right now. Tyson Chandler with the block. That is a very close call.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to say that that's goaltending, but it's close. But getting back to the Milwaukee Bucks, I apologize. I was just seeing the highlights at the end of the Lakers and Hawks game. The Lakers won a 1-point nail biter over the Hawks in Los Angeles. But the Milwaukee Bucks, it's interesting you bring it up. We were going to be talking about them here shortly. And this is a team, in my opinion, that's underachieved here for the last couple of years. And if you go through some of the archives of our show, I probably said it at least 10, 15 times probably. So you wonder if they're finally turning a corner. And if so, this makes the Eastern Conference now really interesting and possibly even more interesting in the Western Conference. Because you got now you can throw the Bucks in the mix. You still have the Raptors and Kawhi Leonard. And you still got the Celtics. And the 76ers just got Jimmy Butler. So the Eastern Conference is wide open right now. I mean, we still all think Golden State's going to win the West. So the East is really a more interesting conference right now. And the Bucks with Budenholzer, they're really buying into his system.
Budenholzer.
And playing good team ball. The Greek Freak possibly is a top five, top six player in the game. And a quiet offseason signing that's really working out for the Bucks is Brook Lopez. He's playing phenomenal. He's added a great outside shot, three-point shot to his game. Malcolm Brogdon looked like his game has improved as well. You know, hitting jumpers, hitting threes.
Yeah,
absolutely. You still got Chris Middleton, Eric Bledsoe. This is quietly a team, like I said, for the last 2 to 3 years have been underachievers, and they might be in that top four mix in the Eastern Conference. Right now they're sitting in the number two spot. It's still early. I mean, they go to Golden State and just whip that ass. I mean, with 134 to 111, and really it was a 3-point game in the second quarter. The next thing you know, Giannis checked in the game, and they just went on a big run, and was up by 15 at halftime. And they just really opened up a can. Obviously, Steph Curry got hurt in the third quarter, but a nice road victory, and they even had a nice road victory at Denver tonight too. So that's a team to watch in the Eastern Conference. Like I said, to me, the East might be the more interesting playoffs in the NBA this year.
Yeah, I think Steph will be okay. We talk about his injury. It's going to kill me for a couple of games, but they've been able to survive without him, but he has that ankle injury because they just have a loaded team, so I'm not going to be too worried about that. But, yeah, that Milwaukee team is the fly in the ointment in the Eastern Conference now, even with Philadelphia getting Jimmy Butler, because I still feel like giving up Sarge and Covington, they sacrificed some three-point shots to get Butler's, you know, alpha dog kind of mentality in that locker room to help out. And I think they're still going to be good. But Budenholzer and that system, for what they have, we talked about the way Giannis can handle the ball at that frame, and do be a jack of all trades, and you get Bledsoe to be able to shoot, Milton to be able to shoot, Lopez to be able to step out. That team is scary. If you look at those other teams, they walked into the season like, you know what, with LeBron gone, I think we really can get it, especially in the Boston's kind of system. And I think, you know, really, Philadelphia looking at what Milwaukee was doing made them go ahead and say, you know what, in order for us to have a for real chance, we might have to go sacrifice a 3-point shooter to get a Jimmy Butler, because we're going to have some dudes that can also play defense and switch on the defensive side of the ball, and which Jimmy Butler can do. So I think that was a part of the response, if you want, from Philadelphia, not just for Kawhi, and what Toronto's doing with Kawhi and what Boston has, but really Giannis and Milwaukee entering into that fray like, yeah, that's a third team. Now, maybe we're just the fourth team if we don't go get Jimmy Butler. Yeah, let's go make that deal. Hmm. So I agree with you. That's going to be very fascinating to watch.
Yeah, 100%. Just to kind of compliment both you guys, and obviously Mike Budenholzer has been a fantastic coach and really good coach. I mean, it kind of was like we were at the stage where he didn't want to jeopardize, I'm sure, his record, you know, coaching the Rebo Hawks. That was a good move for him. But as you can see, he definitely – you get some talent around him, he definitely can get that offense moving, and that's what he's known for, man. So, instant respect. And, yeah, Milwaukee, they definitely did their thing, man. So that's a great squad. And like we talked about, Rob, we will see how this this side got really interesting, to say the least, too, man. So we'll keep an eye on that. We talked about Steph Curry. You know, we don't think it's I don't think it's that serious. I got to check to see the last time I was talking about that or looking that up. Again, they still got Steph off the bench, too, soon. Go ahead.
Yeah.
He's got an abductor strain. He'll be all right. He's got to take a little, maybe a week or two off. But, I mean, they got to flow, too, man. Yeah.
And the good thing, the Warriors are in such a good position. They don't even have to rush him back. I mean, they could really sit him out for like 10 games and get fully healthy and probably still go 8-2 or 9-1 in that 10 games without him.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Good call. All right, let's make a move here. We're almost done here, fellas. Let's kick this off. We got to talk about some football here. And really quickly, we're at that point, guys. It's like right about, 12:30 Eastern here. So I'm always get worried about the lady, too. So I'm going to say about 50 minutes. We'll see if, let us talk here, but let's really quickly talk about Baylor player. We'll do a quick update on SEC, and then we'll talk about a couple men, and we'll let Jake get his thoughts on Ohio State grinding out that win versus a really tough Michigan State squad. Go ahead, Rob.
Well, I mean, we'll talk about that Baylor and that fiasco and that big fight. The guy jumped over a referee to punch a guy in the helmet. I mean, first of all, why do you punch a guy with a helmet on? I mean,
right.
He's not going to feel it. I never understood that when guys try to punch a guy with a helmet on. I was thinking you're going to hurt your hand more than you're going to hurt them. I mean, do guys think? But, I mean, it was like a huge breakout of like six fights all at one time. I may be exaggerating a little bit there. But, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what kind of suspensions come out of that that fiasco between Baylor and Iowa State coming up here. I'm sure the Big 12 is going to be studying that film religiously going forward here. And then we talk about SEC football. Obviously, Alabama, you know, we'll have to see how serious the injury is on Tua and the knee injury. Obviously, they play Citadel this weekend. No need to even play him, in my opinion, in that matchup. And then you have Auburn. But Alabama's already in the SEC title game against Georgia, so that's already a done deal. And you look at the college football playoffs right now. Right now, you would be having Alabama against Michigan in Dallas in the Cotton Bowl, and Clemson against Notre Dame in Miami for the Orange Bowl. I know we talked about this. The way it's setting up right now, you know, I would be surprised if you have two teams in the SEC in the playoffs this year, unless Georgia finds a way to beat Alabama, and then both will have one loss, and they possibly could both be in the playoffs. But if Georgia loses, then they have two losses, which I can't see them being in the playoffs, because the winner of Ohio State, Michigan, will probably have one loss. Notre Dame looks as though they're possibly going to be undefeated. And Clemson looks as though they're going to be undefeated. And then you still have a possibility that the winner of Oklahoma and West Virginia with only one loss. And there's a possibility that Washington State will have one loss. So there's a really good chance you won't have two teams in the SEC this year unless Georgia miraculously wins against Alabama. So I kind of think it's either going to be Georgia or LSU in the Sugar Bowl. If LSU wins out and have only two losses and Georgia have two losses, that'll be an interesting pick to see who the Sugar Bowl takes because LSU actually beat Georgia. And then, of course, the loser of that game may go to the Peach Bowl in Atlanta. So the SEC still might get four teams in the Big Six. The Fiesta looks like they're going to take either Florida or LSU, and the Peach Bowl will take either LSU or Georgia, depending on who the Sugar Bowl takes. So it should be real interesting going forward here.
Yeah, and I'm just going to say about that fight, that dude is done for the regular season. He's got to have the two games. You cannot leap over the ref and start throwing hooks at another dude. He's done. He can go ahead and start preparing for the bowl game if Baylor makes the bowl game. I'm not sure if they got more eligible. It might have been 5 wins. But you got to. He's done. It can't just be one game. If a dude gets one game, basically the whole game or a half a game for another for targeting, when a dude starts throwing haymakers over the ref, he's done. Two games, he's a wrap. I agree. I think it's too many other variables right now. It's going to be a really interesting father if Georgia finds a way to beat Alabama, and that's Alabama's only loss. I still feel like that. If that happens, I feel like the SEC will get two teams. I just don't see them, you know, if you say that Georgia's in and then Notre Dame and Clemson went out and they're in and Alabama has one loss and everybody else is a one-loss team, even if they're a conference champion, I just don't see the committee leaving Alabama out, especially if Tua's healthy. So that'll be really interesting to see. There'll be a whole lot of upset college football fans if that happens, but I can most definitely see a path to that happening. So that's where that is. And you know, just the Texas Tech, that was ridiculous. Texas and that's Big 12 is just a shootout waiting to happen in every game. And that game just the Texas stopped the way to pull it out. That's just what it is.
And that game was a real interesting thing about that game is for the most part Texas was dominating that game for the better part of three quarters. And all of a sudden Texas Tech came back and made a game out of it, tied it up, and really it was kind of like Texas giving Texas Tech a little bit of their own taste of their own medicine. If you guys remember, 10 years ago, Texas Tech had the Michael Crabtree touchdown when Texas was ranked number one in the country. Last second, it beat them. And this was kind of like the same kind of play. Little Jordan Humphrey hauled in that 29-yard touchdown pass with 29 seconds to go to beat Texas Tech and with a 41-34 victory. But, I mean, through the first three quarters of that game, I pretty much saw the game, and Texas was dominating. I was like, wow, how did Texas Tech get back in it? I mean, they got back in it, tied it up, and, of course, Texas with a big play at the end to get the victory. And I don't know if, JQ, if you want to talk about the Ohio State-Michigan State game.
To me, it was encouraging because the defense finally came to play. And if they can get them to play that way moving forward, I'm not saying they can beat the big boys. I can't say that yet. But in terms of having a realistic chance against Michigan right now, the way Michigan is playing, they have to play that brand of defense. They got to adjust on the offensive side of the ball. They did some good things running the ball, but the play calling is still a little herky-jerky. And I think they got to put Tate in those third and twos and fourth and ones because Haskins does not want to get hit. And that's just the bottom line of it. Tate is much more of a runner. What he's going to have to do is a whole lot more of the Chris Leak, Tim Tebow. That's what he's going to have to do with Tate and Haskins for these next couple of games, and probably even in the bowl game. And if we both come back moving next year, I think the best path to success he's going to have. But he's done it before, so he has a blueprint for me. But just objectively looking at that team, the way they play on offense in terms of down and distance and situations, they're going to have to do that. But the punter, with six punts down within the 10-yard line and that defense, if they can do that, and you're not going to get six every week, but if you can kind of port that special teams and defense and then figure out on the offensive side against Maryland and then move into that Michigan game, they got to at least go to a decent bowl game, for Ohio State, not being, in the Emerald Sun Bowl or anything crazy. They have a shot to be in a upper-tier bowl, but I still don't think they make the college football playoff. I think even if they beat Michigan, I'm not convinced that they will get in.
All right. Good call.
They play that game in Columbus this year, right? Michigan and Ohio State?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, Michigan still have to prove to me that they can go in there and beat Ohio State. As well as Michigan is playing, it's just something about that game. Ohio State just seems to always find a way to win. We'll see. I think this is going to be a really interesting football game.
Yeah, do it. I'm not going to watch it. I'm not going to do it to myself.
We're wrapping up. Let's wrap this up really quickly. I love it. Let's wrap this up here. We're going to talk about these last couple games when we're in the show. Let's get Syracuse at number 13, Syracuse at number 3. The surprising Notre Dame squad. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, well, Syracuse is a surprise team this year playing outstanding football. But I like Notre Dame in this one. They seem to be focused. And even with Ian Book out this past week, they just, had another chapter to a really good season for Notre Dame. And I think they'll be too strong for Syracuse at home in this game. I'm going to say 35-24, Notre Dame at home beats Syracuse.
Yeah, you start talking about taking the dome team in middle to late November in the Midwest. I'm going to take Notre Dame. That team is just fully loaded. We had questions about them, but they keep answering them every week. It's the Syracuse defense that I think is the problem in that game. They won't be able to hold Notre Dame's offense down. Syracuse offense could probably give Notre Dame a little problem, but that game starts to move in the third and fourth quarter, and it's going to be cold, more than likely cold and nasty in the Midwest next weekend, next Saturday. I'm going Notre Dame.
You guys, we got to check where that game is. I believe that game's in New York City somewhere, either in Yankee Stadium or the Giants Stadium.
I'm sorry.
It's at Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, that game's in Yankee
Stadium.
Yeah, but
Notre Dame has a big, big following. Well, that's a good thing. New York City has a huge Syracuse alumni, but also Notre Dame has a big alumni base in New York City too. So that could be really interesting. I still like Notre Dame in that matchup.
Yep, it's still outside. it ain't the carrier though.
It's not gonna naturally change directions or change anything like that.
No, it's still outside. Cool. And the thing about New York is a big Notre Dame basket that people don't really understand. Wow. New York is really strong Notre Dame because they don't have a football team. They kind of adopted Notre Dame. They're huge in the New York area, and I'm not gonna. I give you that Syracuse is close, and they're gonna have alumni there, but it's not gonna be that kind of. That's why they're playing it in New York. that kind of disparity that you would think the Syracuse would have playing in New York City because it's so Notre Dame heavy there. So I still take Notre Dame.
All right. All right, gentlemen. Let's finish this up here. Let's talk about this next game. Really quickly, let's talk about number 22, Ohio State, at number 19, the aforementioned Texas, Rob.
You know, Iowa State, with the game against Baylor, I like Texas here at home in this matchup. Not sure if Iowa State's going to have any players with the implications from that fiasco, but I like Texas anyway in this game to win. They have to be some concerns with their defense, but I'm going to say they win by 10 points over Iowa State this weekend.
Oh, man, I still wanted to take Iowa State in this game, but you're right. I can't take them because I don't know the ramifications of it. But I feel like Texas is primed to be beat by Iowa State. You know what? I'm still going to take Iowa State. They're going to rally behind that. I think the Texas to me is still fraudulent. I like Ellinger, but I don't think that defense is horrific. I just don't trust Herman and that team right now. I'm going to go with Iowa State. Iowa State finds a way a couple of times or once or twice a year here recently to pull a shocker against a big-name Big 12 school. I think they do it again against West Virginia. I think they do it again against Texas.
West Coast, anything to add to that?
Texas. Tom Herman. I'm looking at that coach there, too. They Texas don't like losing football, and when they hire a coach, they don't want that coach to be a loser.
Yeah, they've proven their allegiance lies too, man. Really quick, interesting note. I just wanted to throw this out there. So happy Bobby Petrino gets fired from Louisville. Sorry, I had to put that in there. So anyway, just wanted to kind of like say that to. You know, just always makes my heart proud to hear about that. But anyway, not that
Andre still hates Bobby Petrino.
Man, I can't stand that Joker, man. Oh man.
What do you hate more, Bobby Petrino or Bob Stoops?
Whew, Bobby Petrino. Bobby Petrino. I mean, I don't really necessarily hate Bob Stoops. I just don't think Bob Stoops is a big game Bob, man. It's a whole other conversation. But but all good. Hey Rob, let's wrap up the show before the lady cuts us off, man.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you. We had another power-packed show tonight. We thank you all for tuning in once again, Talking Sports for the 12th Man. We'd love to hear from you all on Facebook and Twitter. Give us some feedback. Let us know what you think. Let us know if you agree with us or disagree with us. We would love to dispute with you. And next week, we're going to be on the air on Tuesday night. Tuesday night. There's two nights before Thanksgiving. We're coming with you with the appetizers. The sports appetizers on Tuesday night, November 20th, 11 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Hawaiian time. Good night, people.
Yeah, and I say this for the OT portion, and y'all can thank me later. Google Taylor Rooks. You're welcome.
Good night from the West Coast.
I did see that message by JQ.
Are we going to get in trouble, JQ? Are we going to get in trouble, JQ?
Oh, no. It's definitely PG-13, but you're going to still say, God damn. Yes.
Okay. FEC, don't get us from that, FCC. Hey, guys, we appreciate you guys talking with us. I know that Gary and Curtis cut out. But, again, we always appreciate you guys taking and talking sports with 12 men. Fellas, man, again, it's a pleasure sharing this field of battle with you guys. Have a great, great week. We'll talk to you guys next Tuesday. Making football great again, making the show great again. Gentlemen, good night. We'll talk to you next week.
Good night, people.
Good night, good people.